Hey there, what's up? Welcome to episode 11 of Before the Drop, the show that brings you advice for pursuing a career in music and for those who are waiting for the chorus to drop in their own careers and lives. My name is Zodi, and in this week's episode, I'm going to talk to you about the 10 most important music production tips for beginners. I appreciate you listening to this episode. Please rate and share this with anyone you feel needs to hear it. So over this last week, I took a week off from all content creation and ended up going to the New Forest in the south of England with my wife. It was a much needed break, and now I have a lot more sort of energy and clarity on the situation and what I need to be doing. So I wanted to cover and tackle this subject for three reasons. The first reason being people follow Zodi generally for tips and advice on music production and songwriting. So that's a no-brainer. Point two is it's a very common question that gets asked in the K-pop producer Discord community. I see it a lot of the time. I also get asked this question in the YouTube comments and DMs from people usually who are looking to get into music production. Point three, funnily enough, I actually haven't covered this subject, not only on this podcast, but on my YouTube channel and general Twitch streams and any content generally online. I have not really covered this subject. For this podcast, I will be referencing the dittomusic.com blog post, so definitely check it out for more detail. But I think this is a great blog post. I agree with all the points, but I want to put my own spin and experience and intertwine it with my own story and experiences for you. Okay, point one, what tools do you need? So it's best to start with absolute beginner gear. I completely agree with this. When I started out, I had a very cheap PC. I didn't even have decent headphones or speakers. I think I bought a couple of, I had a couple of like 30, 40 quid tiny little speakers bought for me from my dad. And this was about 2009. And the reason being is I was using like a sub surround system. And every time the kick would go, there would be a massive sub. And it would drive my dad crazy because I was back at home then. So he was like, I don't care. I'll buy you these really cheap speakers. Just stop that sub. Now, interesting point about this is if you were to purchase sub speakers and use them for music production, you would actually be lied to in a sense, because those sort of subby speakers are enhancing frequencies that are not really there or are exaggerated, let's say. So when you're trying to mix and get an honest, accurate view of the sound, it's just not true. You're having frequencies exaggerated for the benefit of that cinematic sound. You want to have speakers that are very flat and honest. Then you're working from a good spot. The first bit of musical equipment I bought outside of that real basic setup was my audio interface, and I'm still using that today, although I will be upgrading at some point. But the first one I bought was about 150 quid. I sold my Xbox 360. This is how long ago it was. Sold my Xbox 360 to Kex, which is a trade-in store here in the UK. And I bought the Complete Audio 6, which I'm still using today. It's a very good beginner-friendly interface. And it is relatively portable as well if you're planning to be on the move. Now, I didn't actually buy a keyboard, a 25-key one I ended up buying until a bit later. And there was a few songs I actually spent my time drawing in every single MIDI note, which took absolutely ages. Now, initially, when I started production, it was to record demos for my band. So it was more about playing guitar and vocals and programming drums at that point. So I would draw in a lot of the drum beats with MIDI data. That's how I started. And just remember, you know, there's no rush to buy everything straight away. You just need the basics for now. You will acquire more tools over time. Now, point two is talking about room acoustic treatment. Now, in all honesty, I never really did this. I just didn't feel that I had the room or the space to add any of this sort of acoustic paneling. Now, definitely it is a good thing to do if you're really serious about mixing. But for me, I was never really saw myself as a mix engineer. It was never a priority of mine. My priority was to write songs. That was the priority, and mixing was always going to be a secondary, tertiary thing. And actually, I didn't even take mixing very seriously until about 5 or 6 years in. it was definitely like at the back of my mind, and I was more concerned about writing cool songs. So when it came to the acoustic and treatment, I didn't really do it. I still haven't really done it now, in honesty. Now, there are some things you can do quite cheaply, like buying the panels. I don't know. You can get some super cheap ones for about 30, 40 quid a panel. I don't know. Something I never really looked into. I think the most important thing about this that you should look out for is try not to mix or record in a reverby room with a lot of reflective surfaces, like hardwood floors, if you're in a room like a greenhouse, for example, with glass, that's going to be very reflective. So you want to have objects in your room that are going to dampen the sound and stop all the reflections happening. So, for example, having carpeted floors, rugs, one technique my mentor said, if you can't afford it, is to simply just have a bookshelf behind, you know, the speakers, and they can help break up the reflections and diffuse the sound. So generally pictures, curtains, all this sort of stuff. Another technique that we use is to just have mattresses from old beds propped up against the walls. They help as well. If you really are on a budget and you need to keep it cheap, just make sure you have stuff on the walls that can just break up the sound and have objects in the room. And on the flip side of that, you don't want to over-treat the room and just go absolutely crazy, as this is going to kill a lot of the high frequencies in the room. And if your room sounds too dry and quiet, you are going to be overdoing it. I think at this early stage, it's kind of about trying everything and seeing what you like. It's also about maybe trying to have a little bit of a focus and thinking what you really want out of this. If you want to be a mix engineer, then I would actually use the money that you do have to treat the room and get some good speakers. If you're a producer, maybe your focus is going to shift more on acquiring plugins, hardware, and some good speakers, some okay speakers, and then dealing with the acoustic treatment later, or just having the money to invest in an external mix engineer who can help you. Point three on this blog is to pick your door. Yeah, just do what you're most comfortable with. What I want to say about this and the door, the digital audio workstation, is there is not really much difference between them. It is really a case of what you prefer to use, what you feel more comfortable with. I use Cubase because it was simply what we had at school years and years before that, and I was most familiar with it. Now, admittedly, back then, I think Cubase was much more catered to rock bands and orchestral composers a bit more, whereas now it's a bit more open to contemporary production, more as, you know, hip-hop, trap, EDM, all of these sort of contemporary genres. It's a bit more kind of mixed, but back then I felt it was more focused on that. Plus as well, I had a mentor back then who was teaching me the basics of music production, and he was a metal rock producer, and that's what he used. So he recommended I do that, and I could learn from him a lot more efficiently. But overall, Cubase was my favorite one. I just understood it, and that's what I went with. Although I am a fan of FL Studio, I like that. I use it every now and then as well. It really doesn't matter. Starting off with doors such as GarageBand is absolutely fine, but I feel with those sort of beginner ones, you will want to step it up and move to something like Cubase, FL, Ableton, Pro Tools, Logic. All right, tip four. Use your ears primarily, then your eyes. This is a good skill to develop, and it is pretty much one of the most crucial skills you're ever going to need when it comes to production and mixing. You want to be able to judge the sound just with your ears and not your eyes. I was very guilty of this, using visual aids from the door, like Cubase, and you know, VST plugins and whatnot, and generally relying too much on what I'm seeing on the screen. Think about it, right? Music is for our ears. And if we're just judging it off our visual, we are losing the essence of music making. That's the thing with visuals. They're only there really to help, but they're not there to define the decision. So generally, all you need to do is very simple. From time to time when you're mixing, just shut your eyes. Just listen really carefully to what's happening. This is a step where your brain gives higher attention to the only sense active, the hearing, and you will be able to make much more refined, precise decisions. And just to riff off that, you do not want to mix elements in solo mode. You always want to be able to mix everything together as a whole. Reason being is that something will sound very different on its own versus in the context of the mix. Now, this is something that a lot of beginners do. Be very aware of it. The way I will do it is I will start in solo mode to hear everything, but then I always switch into the rest of the mix. I'm always flicking between the two and always making comparisons. But at the end, I will always finish with the entire mix. Just to let you know, I have a K-pop production course for beginners. The course is meant for people with little to no experience, ranging from a few months all the way up to about 2 years. If you have been producing for longer than 2 years, this course is not for you. Please click the link in the description so you can check it out. Tip 5. Reference mixes. Now, this is an interesting one, and this isn't just for beginners. This is going to be more for intermediate and advanced writers and producers as well. I'm going to do this into 2 points. Point A is going to be related to the actual mix itself, and point B is going to be related to the production and songwriting side. So, point A, I always have about 2 or 3 mixes open on YouTube whilst I am mixing my own songs. And generally, these mixes that I'm referencing are roughly the same genre and style. This provides great clarity. What happens when you are mixing is your ears get very used to stuff very quickly. And I remember some of my oldest mixes years ago where it would sound great on a certain set of speakers, and then I would go and listen to it on my iPod, back then, iPods, and, you know, the hi-hat would sound crazy loud. And the problem is your ears just don't recognize when something has kind of gone off, especially in the early stages. So what you do is you have reference mixes to provide a point of reference and to provide clarity when you're in, you know, the eye of the storm of your own mix, so to speak. It always helps you recalibrate what's loud, what's quiet, where stuff should be in the stereo field, if you're going to have stuff pan left, pan right, how loud the lead vocal is going to be, how forward it's going to be. You can get all of these from several reference mixes. So generally, I have about 2 or 3 when I'm doing this. So point B I wanted to talk about. Now, this is much more with the K-pop leads and songwriting. So when A&Rs from the K-pop companies, and this probably goes for the West as well, although I don't know as much about the West, but they generally will send out a couple of YouTube links and goes, XYZ artist wants something in this style. Now, what happens is people will just make carbon copies of that exact reference link to the T. But what A&Rs actually want is something that has the same vibe and feeling as these reference tracks, but they don't want a copy of the reference track. Now, this is something that takes a lot of practice because you have to develop your own judgment. And I really struggled with it as well, but you have to kind of know when to stop listening to the reference track. Now, this is something I can't teach you because it's different every time, but it comes with practice and just doing it over and over again. To summarize point A, you always want reference songs in the background to reference your mixes to. And point B is have it to start with, but then knowing when to tear yourself away and go off and do your own thing from the reference track. Point 6, be original. This is a massive one. This is something that even at the top tier of writing, people are trying to do all the time. And I'm seeing it, some of the best K-pop writers, they are true innovators and they know how to push effectively the genre forward. You always see that in any industry where someone's an innovator, they're original, they do something that's so unexpected and it just makes everyone sit forward and listen to it and be like, what the hell is this? This is mind-blowing. Then you'll see a trend of all the other writers kind of following and copying that leader first. And you want to be that leader. You want to be that person who pushes the genre forward. And I can tell you, like, half of my job, well, maybe 30% of my writing, I'm trying to innovate and do something different from everyone else. And you can't really do it until you have a certain grounded foundation of knowledge of the genre before you can start innovating and trying different things. It's a very tricky thing to do. Like, it's a very hard thing to do, but it is a good thing to practice, especially early on, and always try to innovate where possible and not try to make carbon copies of stuff that's already established. Another point as well is a lot of the music that you're hearing today is most likely 6 months to 2 years old. You know, I had a cut fairly recently. I wrote that song in the summer of 2019. So it's almost 3 years old, that track. You have to innovate where you can. And normally I've always found as well, back when I was in a band, I learned this, that it's not one box that needs to be ticked that makes something truly original and innovative, but it's actually a series of smaller boxes that need to be ticked in order to get that different sound from everyone else. A few tips that you could try and implement to be original is to A, have a grounded knowledge of the genre that you're working in. So you probably have a genre that you were pulled into production in the first place, so you're probably going to know it better simply because you've listened to more of that genre. Then what you want to do is try and cross worlds over. That's where really interesting stuff starts to happen. I recommend that you do that and try and cross over worlds from the least likely genres you can think of, and you'll generally come up with something very interesting and different. Point seven, less is more. Definitely agreed. This happens time and time again, not only with production, but songwriting as well. This is something that I had drilled into me when I was studying commercial songwriting at BIM back in 2005. Less is more translates to so many parts of the songwriting process, such as easy, memorable lyrics, melodies, easy, memorable hooks, not having excessive amount of layers, excessive amount of plugins on your signal chain. It's generally just better to sound a tad bit empty but clear. It almost makes the production sound dated if there's too much going on. And it's better and more contemporary to have less. Now, this is more for K-pop and generally hip-hop and R&B, but the elements that need the most attention are generally going to be the kick, the snare, the bass, hi-hat, and vocal. Everything else is secondary and tertiary to those. The amount of repetition of only a handful of melodies with the vocal lines. By having less elements, it's easier to mix. The mixing process is a lot smoother and easier. And overall, it just sounds like a better mix. It sounds clearer. It sounds clean. Everything has clarity. But if you were to have so many layers and elements going off doing their own individual things all the time, it makes the mix sound cluttered, messy, takes a lot more work to mix generally as well. It's better to have less than more in so many situations. Point eight on this blog is saying watch others do their magic. Now, this can work on a few different levels. I would not be here today if it wasn't for YouTube tutorials and paid courses such as the Pro Audio Files, in particular Matthew Weiss. A lot of what he taught in his courses with mixing contemporary genres like EDM and hip hop are huge fundamental parts to my own mixing techniques and what I teach others. Jumping onto live streams and watching producers do their thing, especially Disclosure, for example, who are actually, we all went to the same college, funny enough. They're a bit younger, but that is my claim to fame. We're all from the same area. They do really good producer streams. Highly recommend you check those out as well. But the internet does have limitations, and a lot of what they're teaching is generally for an audience or a blanket group of people, and it is not personalized custom feedback for your individual situation. So with that in mind, I would urge people to try and find ways in which they can hang out in studios and watch more advanced professional producers or mix engineers do their work. You know, you can casually ask them questions that would solve so many problems of your own, save you so much time, and they will probably give you answers to questions that you didn't even know whether to ask or not. People don't know what they don't know, right? So if someone is more advanced telling them what they need to know, they can progress at a much faster rate. There's also the whole online mentoring thing as well, which is possible and does work. So it was just a case of what you want to do, how fast you want to learn, and what your budget allows you to do. A lot of this time, people will give a certain amount for free, but if you really want the best stuff, it's normally a case of having to pay some money to be exposed to these professionals and their work methods. I think a common misconception is people feel that these mentors and professionals will just do it out of the kindness of their hearts to give you their time for free. But the reality is, a lot of these people have their own problems, issues, struggles that they're facing in their own life. And it's normally better to approach these people leading with their own self-interests first. So approaching them with potential skills that you could offer them that would benefit them that they don't know, like marketing, design, art, it could be anything really. And if you can't do that, it's probably going to be something financial related, or they just simply don't have the time. Point nine, which is related to the previous point and will be accelerated massively, would be to get feedback on your music. Now, there's a few anomalies that come into this. So, for example, if you're sharing your music in a public space and people all start giving you feedback, which person are you going to listen to? Are you going to listen to the person who's had 15 years experience, or are you going to listen to the person who's been doing it for 2 years? You know? So I would recommend to be very selective of who you ask for feedback from. Just because they just have been in the game longer, they're going to be able to give you much better quality feedback than someone who's just started. Another thing to be careful of is you want to be able to get feedback that actually tells you that something needs changing or is not working. The last thing you want is to be told, sounds cool, bro. Short term, makes you feel nice. Long term, detrimental. You're never going to advance. You're never going to progress if someone gives you that sort of quick answer to your song and feedback. Now, it's all well and good taking the feedback, but if you don't implement the information that the person has given you, then there's no point in asking for feedback in the first place. The whole point is to get feedback and then implement what the person has told you to do. Generally, if there's a bit of an ego, you're not going to improve. I've seen it time and time again where people ask for feedback from me, I give it to them, and they just don't listen. And it's like, well, what was the point? There's absolutely no point. If you just want me to tell you it sounds good, I can do that, but you're not learning anything from that. But also on the other end of that, you need to agree with the feedback. You know, in your opinion, will it improve your music? If so, great, go for it. If not, don't worry about it. Sometimes you will just receive advice that is just not that helpful and also harmful to you. So you've got to be kind of strategic with the feedback you get and draw only the best ones to you. And funnily enough, to wrap the whole episode up, which is related to the intro, and point 10, which is take breaks. Now, this is something that definitely is relevant to mixing more so, I feel, than production, as your ears do get very used to the mix very quickly. So it would be a case of maybe more than 3 hours or so you want to take a longer break. You've got to rest your ears. I always find that my mixes are a million times better when I go away from a mix, go and do something else, potentially go to bed, wake up the next morning, and it's almost like you question all your decisions in the previous day if you've been doing it too long. You want that to happen. And I always find that it's better just to rest your ears. The first time you come back to a mix is the most important. It's finite and it's limited. So always have a pen and paper ready to take down the observations that you make after listening to the mix for the first time that day. And then you can address those changes after you've listened to the mix. That's something that I would highly recommend. There are so many tips that I could talk about, but I felt that these 10 were a good way to introduce people into the production game. Thanks again for listening, and please rate and share this episode with anyone you feel needs to hear it.